Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This article is entitled, Deputies Arrest Man Suspected of Stealing 175 Barrels of Crude Oil, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Midland County Sheriff's Office patrol deputies arrested a man who was suspected of stealing 175 barrels of crude oil. On January 28th, deputies responded to the area of FM 1213 and ECR 130 due to a petroleum theft. After responding to the call, deputies were advised that an unauthorized tractor truck hauling a water tanker had entered an oil field lease and was taking crude oil from a tank battery without the consent of the oil field company. Deputies were able to locate the suspended tractor truck and conducted a traffic stop. The driver was identified as 52-year-old Asael Camacho. Through an investigation, Camacho was found to have approximately 175 barrels of stolen crude oil. He was arrested and booked into Midland County Central Detention Center on a third-degree felony charge of theft of petroleum product. The investigation is ongoing. This article is entitled, Midlander Gets 60 Years for Teen's Murder, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. A 20-year-old Midland man was sentenced by a jury to 60 years in prison Monday. Midland County District Attorney reported that Nicholas Ty Moreno was charged with murder, tampering with evidence, and theft of a firearm. Last Friday, the jury found Moreno guilty on all three counts after 3 hours of deliberation. The jury sentenced Moreno to 60 years within the Texas Department of Justice for the murder charge, 5 years for tampering with evidence, and 2 years for the theft of a firearm. According to the district attorney's office, the evidence in the case displayed that on July 31, 2021, Moreno and a co-defendant had gone to an associate's home to purchase narcotics. Both Moreno and his co-defendant were armed. While at the home, Moreno exchanged LSD for marijuana with the 15-year-old victim. After the exchange, Moreno, the victim, and the co-defendant left to meet the associates at Al's Grocery to attempt to purchase alcohol. Moreno, the 15-year-old victim, and the co-defendant never went to Al's Grocery, and instead went to Parkway Drive off La Mesa Road. A struggle occurred while in the vehicle between the victim and the defendants. During the struggle, the vehicle careened out of control and became stuck. At that point, Moreno pulled out a gun and shot the victim in the left side of the back 3 times. The 15-year-old victim was able to escape the vehicle. He attempted to crawl away, only to be shot in the back while making the attempt. In October 2020, Moreno had been arrested for burglary of a habitation where firearms were stolen from the residents. The district attorney's report also showed that after Moreno was released on bond in August 2021 for the murder, he was later arrested 5 times for other felony offenses such as evading in a motor vehicle, tampering with evidence, possession of a dangerous drug believed to be fentanyl, and 3 incidents related to the possession of a controlled substance, fentanyl. The case was prosecuted by Midland County Assistant District Attorneys Kyle McCardle and Whitney Garnett. Moreno was represented by Odessa attorney Israel Guardiola. The trial was held in the 441st District Court and presided over by visiting judge James A. Bobo. This article is entitled, The Show Must Go On for MCT Revamp. Construction Continues with a November Deadline, by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. Inside the Midland Community Theater, yellow caution tape forms a single-file line from the doorway to the concessions. On the other side, a bare concrete floor, bricks, tools, and a lift fill the area. The area barely resembles the 1978 original lobby. On the outside, a crater-sized hole where the outdoor amphitheater sat awaits concrete filling, while rebar marks where new pillars should stand for best support. There was a desire to freshen the lobby, Executive Director Tim Jebsen explained. I interpreted freshen as new carpet, paint, chandeliers, but one of our board members, I give him the credit, really felt it was at least worth getting an architect and asking how much it would even cost us to expand. Originally designed by founder Art Cole, the theater faced issues with all of the design elements being completed due to a funding shortage. The $7 million capital campaign happening now answers these issues by providing much-needed space to the educational classrooms in the basement, as well as 3,000 square feet to the lobby. The campaign is funded through donors, sponsors, and other fundraising. We were pleasantly surprised that the price wasn't sticker shock. Expanding the project from just the lobby to educational spaces and the LED wall allowed donors to decide what aspects were really important to them. Some people may not want to donate to a bigger lobby, but they're really passionate about the education, Jebsen said. As per the renderings shared in 2023, the iconic pillars currently standing on the outside of the building will become indoor structures, representing decades of tradition and success in the Midland community. Other features include a center ticket area, larger concessions, and glass windows. Jebsen said the construction team has stayed on or ahead of schedule since starting, and the additions will conclude in November. This article is entitled Two Arrests Made in Connection to Greenwood Vehicle Burglaries by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Two arrests have been made in connection to a recent string of vehicle burglaries within the Greenwood area. The Midland County Sheriff's Office Criminal Investigation Division arrested 19-year-old Skylar Wayne Crabtree on Friday in Big Spring. Another 19-year-old Brian Noah Aguilar was arrested in connection to the thefts while in Ector County. According to police reports, both suspects have been booked into Midland County Central Detention Center and charged with a third-degree felony of engaging in organized crime activity. The investigation is still ongoing. This is the Life Tributes column. Lynette Hermine Foyle Irwin, July 10, 1935 to November 7, 2023. Our family lost our beloved mother and grandmother on November 7, 2023, Election Day. It was quite fitting to be that day because she was such a proud American and showed it in her character, style, and decor. Lynette Hermine Foyle was born on July 10, 1935 in Bogalusa, Louisiana, to Lee Ethel Bateman and Herman John Foyle. Hermine took a leap of faith and went on a blind date with a handsome geologist named Eugene Jean Irwin. Hermine and Jean married on January 30, 1960, in her hometown of Bogalusa. Their only daughter, Lynn, was born later that year in November in New Orleans. After a brief stay in Fort Worth, the Irwin family moved to Midland, where they lived for 38 years. When Jean retired in 2002, the couple moved to Bakersfield, California, to be closer to their daughter Lynn, her husband Brad, and grandson Cameron. In November 2007, Jean passed away suddenly. Hermine is preceded in death by her husband Jean, her parents Herman and Lee Ethel, her sister Hope. She is survived by her daughter Lynn Califf, son-in-law Brad, grandson Cameron, step-grandson Chris and his wife Val, and daughter Millie, step-grandson Kyle, and his wife Brittany, and sons Jackson and Colvin. Family was everything to Hermine, and there will be a graveside ceremony and burial for both Hermine and Jean in the spring of 2024 in Bogalusa, Louisiana, at the Foyle family plot. Helen Zant Adcock, April 20th, 1937 to January 24th, 2024. Helen Zant Adcock died peacefully on Wednesday, January 24th, surrounded by family and loved ones. She was 86 years old. Helen was born in Midland on April 20th, 1937 to John Bradford Zant and Annie Lee Brunson Zant. Helen graduated from Midland High School in 1956 and then attended the University of Texas in Austin. It was there she met Clint Hurt. They were married and had two children, John Clint and Patrick Hurt. Throughout the 1960s and into the 70s, they lived in Midland and raised their children there. Helen and Clint eventually parted ways. Helen married John Robert Adcock in 1977. They were married until Johnny's death in March of 2016. Helen is predeceased by her husband, John Robert Adcock, and stepson, Patrick Rocks. She is survived by her two sons, John Clint Hurt and his wife, June Foch of Midland, son Patrick Hurt and his wife, Tina Lustig of New York City, a brother, John Zant, and his wife, Diet, as well as six grandchildren. Per Helen's wishes, there will be no memorial service. Jimmy Jim Arnon Rogers, August 8, 1934 to January 25, 2024. Jimmy Jim Arnon Rogers, 89 of Midland, passed away peacefully at his home on January 25. Jim was born on August 8, 1934 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to his parents Arnon Jack Red Rogers and Zella Birdie Alice Savage Rogers. On March 3, 1956, Jim married his wife, Shirley Willard Chumley, in Casper, Wyoming. Their union was blessed with three children, Michael Joe Rogers, 1956, Karen Marie Rogers, 1958, and Susan Jeanette Rogers Smith, 1970. Jim and Shirley were married for over 63 years prior to her passing in 2019. Jim was predeceased by his wife, Shirley Willard Rogers, son Michael Joe Rogers, and parents Arnon Jack Rogers and Birdie Savage Rogers. He is survived by his daughters, Karen Rogers of Midland and Susan Scott Rogers Smith of Carrollton, as well as five grandchildren and seven great-grandchildren. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. on Monday, February 5th at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorial donations be made to Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Yesenia Emery, January 24, 1977 to January 26, 2024. Yesenia Emery, 47, of Midland, died suddenly on the night of January 26th. She was born in Pecos on January 24, 1977, to Maria and Fernando Tarango. Yesenia was preceded in death by her grandmothers Emilia Jaquez and Josefina Tarango, her grandfather Felix Tarango, her tia Tomasa Rivera, her beloved fiancé Robert Hunt. She is survived by her daughter Kristen Emery, her mother Maria Tarango, her father Fernando Tarango, her sister Veronica Tarango, her brother Gabriel Tarango, her nephew Aaron Tarango, and her fiancé's daughter Claire Hunt, her mother-in-law Cindy Marler, her stepfather-in-law Coy Marler, and her father-in-law Skipper Hunt. A visitation will take place 7 to 9 p.m. on Thursday, February 1st, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Services will be at 10 a.m. Friday, February 2nd at Mid-Cities Church, Neely English Campus. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Jerry Lynn Sims, April 25, 1948 to January 26, 2024. Jerry Lynn Sims of Midland passed away in Lubbock on Friday, January 26th after a valiant battle with multiple illnesses. Jerry was born in Kermit on April 25, 1948. In 1998, Jerry married Jan Spencer. Blending families, the arrival of grandchildren, hosting friends, they created a full and happy life together. Jerry is survived by his loving wife Janet Marie Spencer Sims of Midland, former wife Judy Taylor of Hobbs, New Mexico, and their children, daughter Kim Sims Chacon, Tony of Keller, son Steve Sims, Denise of Hobbs, Brian Trout, mother Jan of Midland, brothers Doug Sims of Kermit, and Larry Sims of Metropolis, Illinois, as well as seven grandchildren. Jerry was preceded in death by his parents, Earlene and Earl Sims. As per Jerry's request, there will be no formal services. If you wish to honor Jerry in this manner, Real Thanks in Midland, the Spina Bifida Association of North Texas, or the Scottish Rite Hospital for Children of Dallas all hold a special meaning with the family. Peggy Rohner, November 28, 1940 to January 17, 2024. Peggy Rohner, 83 of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, January 17th. Interment will be at Graceland Cemetery in Chicago, Illinois. Peggy was born on November 28th in Chicago, Illinois, to John and Pearl Rohner. Peggy is survived by Helen Sandifer, Dwayne, and Lori Bray, Mike, their family, and several fur babies. Peggy is preceded in death by her parents, John and Pearl, her brothers William, Bob, and Tommy, and her sisters Barbara and Patricia. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that donations be made to any animal rescue organizations. Cremation arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com.
Six music students earn elite honor. Ector County ISD announced in a Friday news release, six students have earned the prestigious title of Texas All-State Musician from the Texas Music Educators Association, TMEA. This honor follows a rigorous series of regional and area auditions that begins with some 70,000 high school students and ends with only about 2% of those students selected as All-State. Two of the students, Justice Davis and Sean Price, are receiving this recognition for the fourth year in a row. Three students have earned this title for the second year in a row, and one is a newcomer to this honor. The 2024 TMEA All-State members are Justice Davis, Senior Odessa High School Choir, Tenor 1, four-year TMEA All-State. Sean Price, Senior, Permian High School Band, Horn, four-year TMEA All-State. Elijah Keast, Senior, Permian High School Choir, Bass, 1, two-year TMEA All-State. Cadence Searcy, Junior, Permian High School Choir, Alto, 1, two-year TMEA All-State. Genesis Paget, Jr., Permian High School Choir, Alto 2, two-year TMEA All-State. Aiden Armendariz, Jr., Permian High School Orchestra, String Bass Achieving TMEA All-State, all 4 years of high school. That is a rare feat and an incredible accomplishment considering the quality of performers in the auditions. For Permian's Sean Price, it was a goal of his from the beginning of high school. It runs deep in his family. I don't want to say I felt pressure, he said in the release, but there was a little bit of pressure because my mom was also a four-year All-Stater. To be an All-State musician means that you are the best individually in the state of Texas, so it's an elite honor. ECISD Executive Director of Fine Arts Aaron Hawley said in the release, and they'll be considered All-State musicians for the rest of their life. These are some of the most talented music students in the state. They are also some of the most hardworking music students in the state, and that aspect is often overlooked. "You have to work all year," said OHS's Justice Davis in the release. "It's a nonstop process. I practice every single day, at home, at school, during lunch, whenever I can." Price agreed. "I don't think I've gone to lunch 90% of the lunches for the past, 7 years," he said. "While everyone else is in the cafeteria, I'm in the band hall practicing, taking lessons every week. It's a lot of hours." As All-State musicians, these kids will perform in one of 18 All-State ensembles in band, orchestra, and vocal divisions as part of the TMEA Clinic/Convention of February 7th through the 10th in San Antonio. It is an experience they definitely treasure. "TME Clinic Convention is so fun," said Price. "It's so many amazing people, so many people who are so good at their instruments. Everyone is there for the same reason. Everyone just loves to play." Follow the Yellow Brick Road, the Midland Community Theater at 2000 West Wadley in Midland has scheduled The Wizard of Oz, opening February the 2nd at the theater. The show will run through March the 2nd. Show times are Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and 2:30 p.m. Sundays. Matt Rist, who portrays the Tin Man, said via text, "The show has partnered with Midland Animal Services to encourage adoption of shelter pets." Ritz said a live dog will be part of the show as Toto. The show is rated for the whole family. Find out more and get tickets at tinyurl.com/58WSFYS7. Quick hits. Shakespeare auditions at OC. Auditions for Much Ado About Nothing continue today and February the 2nd and 3rd at the Globe Theater, 2308 Shakespeare Road. No appointment is needed. Auditions are 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. today and noon to 4 p.m. February the 2nd and 3rd. Every actor who auditions will get about 20 minutes to work with the director. Register to vote. The last day to register to vote in the March primary is Monday, February the 5th. The first day of early voting is Tuesday, February the 20th. And the last day to apply to vote by mail is February the 23rd. The final day of early voting is March 1st, and Election Day is March 6th in Texas. Symphony Young Professionals. West Texas Symphony Young Professionals will have a 7:30 p.m. February the 2nd event, where attendees can sit in on a symphony rehearsal and enjoy a backstage mixer at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. On February the 3rd, they can attend the West Texas Symphony Concert, WTS Spotlight, at 7:30 p.m., also at the Wagner Noel. Both events are free and for people age 21 and over. RSVP is required by January the 31st. Send your email to syp@wtxs.org. Wouldn't it be lovely? Wouldn't it be lovely? A play based on George Bernard Shaw's Pygmalion and the musical My Fair Lady has its last performances February 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at 7:30 p.m. at the Globe Theater. Seating is limited. General admission tickets are $15 and can be purchased at Lovely Globe. Brownpapertickets.com. All faculty and students will be admitted free with an Odessa College ID. Saturday evening's opening performance at the Globe Theater of the Odessa College Theater Department's production, Wouldn't It Be Lovely? A modern fairy tale played to a sold-out house, a news release said. We would like to thank the audiences for a sold-out opening night and a momentous opening weekend. Response to the show has been overwhelming, and the performers have unlocked new potential. You have three more opportunities this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday to experience the magic of live theater with Wouldn't It Be Lovely. So we hope that you will come join us, OC Department, theater director Aaron Gantz said in the release. This day in history. On January the 31st, 1958, the United States entered the space age with its first successful launch of a satellite, Explorer 1, from Cape Canaveral. And on this date in 1797, composer Frank Schubert was born in Vienna. In 1863, during the Civil War, the 1st South Carolina Volunteers, an all-black Union regiment composed of many escaped slaves, was mustered into federal service at Beaufort, South Carolina. In 1865, the U.S. House of Representatives joined the Senate in passing the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution, abolishing slavery, sending it to states for ratification. The amendment was adopted in December 1865. In 1919, Baseball Hall of Famer Jackie Robinson was born in Cairo, Georgia. In 1945, Private Eddie Slovak, 24, became the first U.S. soldier since the Civil War to be executed for desertion as he was shot by an American firing squad in France. In 1961, NASA launched Ham the Chimp aboard a Mercury Redstone rocket from Cape Canaveral. Ham was recovered safely from the Atlantic Ocean following his 16.5-minute suborbital flight. In 1971, astronauts Alan Shepard, Edgar Mitchell, and Stuart Roosa blasted off aboard Apollo 14 on a mission to the moon. In 2000, an Alaska Airlines MD-83 jet crashed into the Pacific Ocean off Port Hueneme, California, killing all 88 people aboard. In 2001, a Scottish court sitting in the Netherlands convicted one Libyan and acquitted a second in the 1988 bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland. Abdel Basset al-Megari was given a life sentence but was released after 8 years on compassionate grounds by Scotland's government. He died in 2012. In 2012, Facebook announced plans to go public with a stock offering. In 2013, Caleb Moore, 25, an innovative freestyle snowmobile rider who'd been hurt in a crash at the Winter X Games in Colorado, died at a hospital in Grand Junction. Obituaries. Kayla Dean Brady, age 56, passed away on January the 21st. Memorial services are pending and will be posted on Kayla's Facebook page. All family and friends who wish to attend her life celebration are welcome. Yasina Emery, age 47, of Midland, died suddenly on the night of January the 26th. A visitation will take place 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Thursday, February the 1st, at Natalie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Services will be at 10 a.m. Friday, February the 2nd, at Mid-Cities Church, Neely, English Campus. Jim Frederick, age 82, died on Saturday, January the 27th. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Wendell J. Kimbrough, Sr., age 80, of Odessa, passed away on Monday, January the 29th. A visitation for Wendell will be held Thursday, February the 1st, at 11:30 a.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home, 601 North Allegheny Avenue, followed by a celebration of life at 2 p.m. Marilyn June Main, age 74, of Odessa, passed away on Sunday, January the 28th. Services are scheduled for Saturday, February the 3rd, at 11 a.m. at Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane in Odessa, followed by a food and fellowship at noon. Marilyn will be laid to rest in Sunset Memorial Gardens, 6801 East I-20 Business Loop in Odessa. Tina Jean Coe, age 55, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January the 24th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Sarah Joan Hines, 84, died Monday, January the 29th in Midland. Services are pending with the American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Lisa Ann LaRue, age 64 of Midland, died Thursday, January the 25th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Tommy Ray Shadwick Sr., 63 of Odessa, died Tuesday, January the 23rd. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. January the 31st at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by the Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Thomas Wilson Stanley, age 72 of Odessa, died Sunday, January the 28th. Funeral service will be held at 4 p.m. February the 3rd at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Jackie Voglino, age 97 of Odessa, died Saturday, January the 27th. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. February the 3rd at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Gloria Waite, age 78 of Midland, died Friday, January the 26th. Mass was celebrated at 1 p.m. January the 18th at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland. Burial immediately following in American Heritage Cemetery. Lee Riston, age 66 of Midland, died Thursday, January the 25th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Good news! FOCA holds first student council meeting. First Odessa Christian Academy recently had its first student council meeting for middle and high school students. Head of schools, Lindsay Lumpkin, said the students are super excited. Spear auditions at OC. Auditions for Much Ado About Nothing are January 29th, 30th, and 31st, and February 2nd and 3rd at the Globe Theater, 2308 Shakespeare Road. No appointment is needed. Auditions are 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. January 29th, 30th, and 31st, and noon to 4 p.m. February 2nd and 3rd. Every actor who auditions will get about 20 minutes to work with the director. President Biden has said he'd shut the U.S.-Mexico border if given the ability. What does that mean? President Joe Biden has made some strong claims over the past few days about shutting down the U.S.-Mexico border as he tries to salvage a border deal in Congress that would also unlock money for Ukraine. The deal had been in the works for months and seemed to be nearing completion in the Senate before it began to fall apart, largely because Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump doesn't want it to happen. A bipartisan bill would be good for America and help fix our broken immigration system and allow speedy access for those who deserve to be here, and Congress needs to get it done, Biden said over the weekend. It'll also give me, as president, the emergency authority to shut down the border until it could get back under control. If that bill were the law today, I'd shut down the border right now and fix it quickly. A look at what Biden meant and the political and policy considerations at play. Where is Biden's tough talk coming from? Biden wants continued funding for Ukraine in the face of Russia's invasion. Senate Republicans had initially said they would not consider more money for Kyiv unless it was combined with a deal to manage the border. As the talks have progressed, Biden has come to embrace the efforts to reach a bipartisan border security deal after years of gridlock on overhauling the immigration system, but his statement that he would shut down the border right now if Congress passed the proposed deal is more about policy, politics than policy. He is seeking to disarm criticism of his handling of migration at the border as immigration becomes an increasing matter of concern to Americans in the lead-up to the presidential election. Would the border really shut down under the deal? No, trade would continue. People who are citizens and legal residents would continue to go back and forth. Biden is referencing an expulsion authority being negotiated by the lawmakers that would automatically kick in on days when illegal border crossings reach more than 5,000 over a five-day average across the southern border, which is currently seeing as many as 10,000 crossings per day. The authority shuts down asylum screenings for those who cross illegally. Migrants could still apply at ports of entry until crossings dip below 3,750 per day. But these estimates, the final tally hasn't been ironed out. There's also an effort to change how asylum cases are processed. Right now, it takes several years for a case to be resolved, and in the meantime, many migrants are released into the country to wait. Republicans see that as one reason that additional migrants are motivated to come to the U.S. The goal would be to shrink the resolution time to 6 months. It would also raise the standards for which migrants can apply for asylum in the first place. The standard right now is broad by design so that potential asylum seekers aren't left out, but critics argue the system is being abused. Didn't Trump also threaten to shut down the border? Yes, Trump vowed to shut down the U.S.-Mexico border entirely, including to trade and traffic, in an effort to force Mexico to do more to stem the flow of migrants. He didn't follow through, though. The closest he came was during the pandemic when he used emergency authorities to severely limit asylum, but trade and traffic still continued. The recent echoes of the former president by Biden, who has long argued that Trump's border policies were inhumane, reflect the growing public concern about illegal migration, but Biden's stance threatens to alienate progressives who already believe he has shifted too far right on border policies. Does Biden already have authority to shut down the border? House Speaker Mike Johnson, a Trump ally and critic of the proposed deal, has argued that presidents already have enough authority to stop illegal border crossings. Biden could, in theory, strongly limit asylum claims and restrict crossings, but the effort would almost certainly be challenged in court and would be far more likely to be blocked or curtailed dramatically without a congressional law backing the new changes. What is the outlook for the proposed deal? Prospects are dim. A core group of senators negotiating the deal had hoped to release details text this week, but conservatives already say the measures do not go far enough to limit immigration. House Speaker Johnson, Republican Louisiana, on Friday sent a letter to colleagues that aligns him with hardline conservatives determined to sink the compromise. The speaker said the legislation would have been dead on arrival in the House if leaked reports about it were true. As top senator, Senate negotiator James Lankford, Republican, Oklahoma, said on Fox News Sunday that after months of pushing on border security and clamoring for a deal tied to Ukraine aid, when we're finally getting to the end, the Republicans seem to be saying, "Oh, just kidding. I actually didn't want a change in law because of the presidential election year." Trump is loath to give a win to Biden on an issue that animated the Republicans' successful 2016 campaign and that he wants to use as he seeks to return to the White House. He said Saturday, "I'll fight it all the way. A lot of the senators are trying to say respectfully, they're blaming it on me. I say, that's okay. Please blame it on me, please." Cates, Video Games and Hearing Loss by Carol A. Cates, MSN, MBA, RN, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. My husband is a great testament to the dangers of loud music. There have been more days that I can count in our marriage where I could hear his car coming down the street before I saw it because he had the music playing so loudly. He is definitely hard of hearing after years of loud music. My kids, I think, learned a bit about loud music and hearing loss from their dad and are better at keeping the volume to reasonable levels except for one area, video games. There are days when they were growing up, I worried about the house coming down because of all the loud booms, bangs, and crashes with their games. Now, with both my kids and the grandkids, I don't worry about the house coming down so much because they wear headphones. But a study released earlier this month by the World Health Organization, WHO, that links loud video games to hearing issues in kids and young people have made me rethink if I shouldn't worry about their hearing as much as I worry about my husband's. The study that the WHO did in regard to hearing issues and video games was a meta-analysis. I like to think of meta-analysis studies as ultimate studies. Meta-analysis studies don't do the research, they weigh the research that is out there on a subject. They are a great way of looking at a body of research, especially when the conclusions aren't the same, to come up with an overarching recommendation. The way they weigh research is by looking at the conclusions and quality of all the studies on a particular subject and use those weights to come up with the conclusions about the best recommendation. Quality is determined by several factors such as number and diversity of the study subjects. If the study had the proper controls in place to eliminate as many biases as possible, and if subject and researchers kept separated, a process known as blinding. In this meta-analysis study, the WHO researchers included 14 studies from across the globe, which looked at a total of 54,000 adults and children on the subject of video games and hearing. They found the average sound level in video games was near or over sound levels that can cause hearing damage over time. Intermittent sounds such as gunfire, crashes, or engines revving can be loud enough they cause temporary hearing loss or ringing in the ears. The study also found that those who regularly play video games are more likely to develop a hearing condition called tinnitus. Tinnitus is a condition where a person hears a ringing, buzzing, or roaring sound in one or both ears. Tinnitus can be intermittent or continuous. About 10 to 25% of adults have some form of tinnitus currently. Headphone use is also more common with gamers, making loud sounds closer to the ears. Headphones use is also more common in already loud environments, making gamers turn up the volume even louder to drown out other noises. Because of the prevalence of video games as entertainment across the globe, average and intermittent sound levels, and headphone use, the WHO estimates over 1 billion young people are currently at risk for major loss and/or tinnitus. There is more to hearing loss than just having to keep the volume up and repeating things. Hearing loss can lead to frustration for both the person with hearing loss and for their families, which can damage relationships and cause social isolation. There is an increasing body of research that has linked hearing loss to falls, walking problems, dementia, faster rates of brain atrophy, the shrinking that occurs in the brain as we age, and depression. Preventing hearing loss prevents many pretty significant health issues. The researchers recommend several ways to keep gaming but prevent hearing loss. First, limit volume levels. Many devices now can track decibel levels and automatically lower volumes with the intermittent loud noises. The recommended maximum sound exposure to avoid hearing damage for adults is no more than 80 decibels over 40 hours. 80 decibels is about the volume of a gas-powered lawnmower or leaf blower. For every 3 decibels over 80, the time has to be cut in half, so 83 decibels means no more than 20 hours of exposure per week. For kids, that maximum is no more than 75 decibels over 40 hours. For most systems, 60% of max volume is close to the 40-hour exposure limit. Second, make sure headphones fit well so they block out external noises, or consider noise-canceling options so it's not tempting to crank up the volume. Finally, take frequent breaks when gaming so your ears can rest. If you do experience hearing changes or notice it in your loved ones, speak to your primary healthcare provider. The worst part if hearing loss is that it's permanent. That is the biggest reason protecting hearing now is so very important. If you or your loved ones are gamers, please make sure you add hearing loss prevention into your game settings and routines. High school program fair for 8th graders. For the second year in a row, Ector County ISD is hosting a one-day event for all 8th grade students to get a taste of the class options available to them when they start high school. The 2024 High School Program Fair will be held from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tuesday at the Odessa College Sports Center. The 8th graders from each middle school will travel to OC at a specified time and will then get the chance to talk with high school teachers and students in all of the various programs, from animation and athletics to welding and yearbook and everything in between. These students are building their high school schedules now, so this gives them the chance to explore firsthand the courses that interest them. A new piece of this event is the parent session. Between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m., the fair will stay open for parents and students from all other grade levels to come by and visit with the program reps, just as the 8th graders will do during the day. TEA releases annual report for 2023. The Texas Education Agency, TEA, announced January 29th the release of the annual report for 2023. The report provides a detailed overview of the state of public education in Texas, highlighting the initiatives and collaborative efforts that help ensure every student receives a high-quality education. The report also illustrates the progress and achievements taking place in public school across Texas. I'm fortunate to see firsthand the remarkable efforts of dedicated teachers across our state who work exceptionally hard to ensure every child in every classroom has the opportunity to thrive and succeed, Texas Education Commissioner Mike Moreth said in a news release. As we strive to fulfill our mission of preparing students for life beyond the classroom, our annual report serves as a tool to assess the progress of Texas and identify areas where continued resource investments are necessary to ensure all Texas students have access to a quality education that prepares them for the future. The 2023 annual report focuses on areas of achievement based on the agency's strategic priorities: recruitment, support and retain teachers and principals, build a foundation for reading and math, connect high school to career and college, and improve low-performing schools. The 2023 annual report also highlights key policies passed during the 88th legislative session that impact public school funding, curriculum standards, and school safety. To view a full copy of the 2023 annual report, please visit the Texas Education Agency website at https://tea.texas.gov/about-tea/news/multimedia/annual-reports/annual-reports. Six students earn elite honor of TMEA All-State Musician. Ector County ISD announced in a Friday news release, six students have earned the prestigious title of Texas All-State Musician from the Texas Music Educators Association. TMEA. This honor follows a rigorous series of regional and area auditions that begins with some 70,000 high school students and ends with only about 2% of those students selected as All-State. Two of the students, Justice Davis and Sean Price, are receiving this recognition for the fourth year in a row. Three students have earned this title for the second year in a row, and one is a newcomer to this honor. The 2024 TMEA All-State members are Justice Davis, Senior, Odessa High School Choir, Tenor, 1, 4-year TMEA All-State. Sean Price, Senior, Permian High School Band, Horn, 4-year TMEA All-State. Elijah Keast, Senior, Permian High School Choir, Bass, 1, 2-year TMEA All-State. Cadence Searcy, Jr., Permian High School Choir, Alto, 1, 2-year TMEA All-State. Genesis Paget, Jr., Permian High School Choir, Alto, 2, 2-year TMEA All-State. Aiden Armendariz, Jr., Permian High School Choir, String Bass. Achieving TMEA All-State all 4 years of high school is a rare feat and an incredible accomplishment considering the quality of performers in the audition. For Permian's Sean Price, it was a goal of his from the beginning of high school. It runs deep in his family. I don't want to say I felt pressure, he said in the release, but there was a little bit of pressure because my mom was also a 4-year All-Stater. To be an All-State musician means that you are the best individually in the state of Texas, so it's an elite honor. ECISD Executive Director of Fine Arts Aaron Hawley said in the release, and they'll be considered All-State musicians for the rest of their lives. These are some of the most talented student musicians in the state. They are also some of the most hardworking music students in the state, and that aspect is often overlooked. You have to work all year, said OHS's Justice Davis in the release. It's a nonstop process. I practice every single day, at home, at school, during lunch, wherever I can. Price agreed. I don't think I've gone to lunch 90% of the lunches in the past like 7 years, he said. While everyone else is in the cafeteria, I'm in the band hall practicing, taking lessons every week. It's a lot of hours. All-State musicians, these kids will perform in one of 18 All-State ensembles in band, orchestra, and vocal divisions as part of the TMEA Clinic Convention, February 7th through 10th in San Antonio. It's an experience they definitely treasure. TMEA Clinic Convention is so fun, said Price. It's so many amazing people, so many people who are so good at their instruments. Everyone is there for the same reason. Everyone just loves to play.
Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 70-year-old man in overall good health. I am also a dialysis patient and have neuropathy in my feet. About 3 or 4 years ago, I began experiencing very strong nasal dripping during meals, like a running faucet. This happened during every meal, every day. Of course, my doctors just brush it off and say it's allergies. Well, it's not allergies. And if it were, why does it only happen when I eat a meal? It doesn't happen when I have snacks. And it can't be food allergies, as if all of a sudden I'm allergic to every food, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's hard to believe. Any thoughts? And Dr. Roach answers, you're quite right. It's not allergies. It's a type of non-allergic vasomotor rhinitis, which just means that your nose is getting congested due to the nerves acting on them. Vasomotor rhinitis is psychological. People who have lived in a cold environment know that their noses tend to run for a while after walking around outside. then coming back inside. One of the major jobs of your nose is to warm up and humidify the cold and dry air. And when you are outside, the blood flow to your nose and the fluid produced both increase to protect your lungs. When you aren't breathing that cold, dry air, your nose will run like a faucet for a while until the body realizes that you don't need it anymore. What you have is a special type of non-allergenic vasomotor rhinitis called gustatory rhinitis. As the name implies, your nose runs when you eat. Different people may have different foods that trigger this response, but hot liquids like soup and spicy foods are among the most common. These foods seem to trigger the same nerves that sense the conditions where more blood flow and nasal secretions are needed. You can write to Dr. Roach at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
This is the Dear Abby column. Wife finds it difficult to accept husband's past. Dear Abby, after 17 years of marriage, I learned, to my dismay, that when he was 22, my husband had a long-term relationship with a 16-year-old. He insisted that she had lied about her age and told him she was 20. But even after finding out her true age, he went back to her. Her mother was okay with it, as well as other family members who all knew she was underage. It makes me sick to my stomach. They engaged in sexual activity when she was underage. They were even engaged until she allegedly cheated. I'm livid because he tried to say he told me she was underage, but he never did. I would never have dated or married someone who knowingly had sex with an underage individual. I've been questioning a lot about this marriage, but this sent me over the top. Am I overreacting because he, quote, was young and dumb and never did something stupid and never did it again, unquote, as he puts it? Signed, Can't Get Over It. Dear Kent, the most important line in your letter, as far as I am concerned, is this one. I've been questioning a lot about this marriage. The first item on your agenda should be to make an appointment with a licensed marriage and family therapist so you and your husband can start working on what's wrong with your relationship. His feelings for that girl were sincere. He would have married her had she not cheated on him. If he has been a faithful and caring husband since your marriage, it's time to forgive him for his youthful indiscretion, which was encouraged by the girl's family. Dear Abby, my son and daughter-in-law are in their early 30s. They have a 5-year-old child who hasn't seen a doctor since infancy. They opted not to vaccinate. Although my husband and I do not agree with it, we keep our mouths shut. Our precious granddaughter has been sick with a severe cough and fever on and off for close to 2 months. Although they have health insurance, they refuse to take her to a doctor. They treat her with over-the-counter meds and holistic remedies. I finally told my daughter-in-law I felt it was negligence to not take the child to a pediatrician. The other grandmother feels the same way I do. Now I'm being canceled for finally expressing how I feel. I am disconsolate with the thought that they would actually do that to me. I did apologize for my choice of words and the way I said them. What else can I do to make things right again? My son is no help. He doesn't go against his wife for any reason. Signed, Heartbroken Nana in Florida. Dear Nana, if I read your letter correctly, you stated that your grandchild has had no vaccinations, nothing to prevent whooping cough, diphtheria, measles, chickenpox, or polio. To me, that describes gross negligence. Because your henpecked son refuses to step in, you may have to accept there is nothing you or the other grandmother can do to, quote, make things right again. But the two of you could contact Child Protective Services and ask if they agree that what's happening is negligence. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.